So this is the Lagrangian, and how we define it is we list first the objective, and then we take a scalar product of the constraint and the multiplier. So that's the constraint function. Note our convention, something less than, we multiply by. Did I make a mistake? Yeah, that's negative, right? And then here, I can't make mistake, can't go wrong. I can take new transpose AX minus B or new transpose B minus AX. It's completely irrelevant because new doesn't have any sign constraints on it. And the reason is, we'll see, that we will not impose sign constraints on you. You might think, why? Well, because the goal here, what is the goal of a Lagrangian? The goal is to write the problem as a min-max problem. If you started with a min problem, you want min-max. If you start with a max, you want max-min, of course. So the reason why the Lagrangian is useful is because it allows you to write the problem in a way that looks unconstrained. Of course, it's implicitly constrained. The constraint is implicit because you see that if x doesn't satisfy the constraint, focus on this one first. If ax is not equal to b, then this little devil will adjust its sign and make sure that this quantity is plus infinity. You don't want to go to regions where this is plus infinity because you want to minimize. So you'll see that, in fact, x will try to arrange itself so as to satisfy the constraint. By the way, if it's impossible, maybe it's not possible, then say capital A is 0, B is 1, it's impossible to satisfy the constraint. So then the problem is not feasible, and P star is actually plus infinity. So this is even valid when the problem is not feasible. Likewise, if x is if x has a negative component, then this guy will be able to shoot it up to plus infinity, because x negative, that's positive now. All right? So that is why we work with this Lagrangian. We could work with a different Lagrangian. If it has the same thing, it will give you a possibly different dual. But this one is by far the simplest. Okay? Step 1, Lagrangian. Step 2, min-max. Step 3. Yeah, we just exchange. And I want to say equal. We'll see about that. For now, all I know is that there is an inequality which holds for any function of several variables. Min, max, you remember? What? How min, max compares with max, min? I didn't hear, so I'll just assume you know. So it's counterintuitive. The min is bigger than the max, right? That's you go against the flow. Okay, we're done, because now we can look at the dual. That's the dual problem. Typically, we call it D star. This always holds, right? Always, no matter what the problem is. But for LP, you can say more. Before we figure that out, so right now what we've done is called weak duality. We just have an inequality. Let me figure out what D star is. Right.
So that actually equals P star. The min max actually equals P star.
Right. In most cases, there's some pathological cases.
That's a weird thing. Okay.
Yeah.
That was a detail in this paper.
No, we'll cover that in detail.
Sure.
All right. So D star is the solution of this problem. Of course, it's again a max-min problem, not very convenient. But the crux is that in this case, that doesn't happen for any optimization problem. This piece is very easy to compute. So this piece, what I call that, is often called the dual function. G of lambda nu is the dual function, and we actually can work out what it looks like, because the Lagrangian, if you notice, is a bilinear function. So you fix lambda nu and you minimize with respect to x. You have a minimum of a linear function. Hey, but there's no constraints. So it's very simple to work out. I'm going to work it out by collecting all the coefficients in x, and then there will be a constant term. What is the constant term in there? Constant with respect to x. Nu transpose b. It's everything that is not impacted by changes in x. Now I'm collecting elements in x, and that's a simple matter. X transpose c minus a transpose mu minus lambda. Okay? I'm just bookkeeping here, reordering terms, collecting everything that depends on x, plus something that doesn't. Now this here is a very simple optimization problem. Minimize a weighted sum of a variable. You have no constraints. What is the answer? So if I gave you a vector like, say, d transpose x, and I minimize it, I get two cases. So what does intuition say about this function? Yeah, it's minus infinity in most cases. In fact, if d is not zero, it's minus infinity. The only case when it's not minus infinity is when d is zero. Okay? If d is zero, then the function is zero. Otherwise, so this guy here, I can write out nu transpose b if the d is zero. Here's my d vector. Minus infinity otherwise. Any questions at this point? All right. What happens is you want to look at the dual problem. For now, we just applied weak duality. We got a new problem. Okay, that problem involves so-called dual variables and a so-called dual function. We worked out the dual function, and we notice sometimes it's minus infinity. We want to maximize it. So we don't want to go to regions where it's minus infinity. So we might as well impose this kind of constraint. That's why I say it's implicitly constrained. Buried in the definition of G is a constraint on the variables of the problem. And I want to make those explicit. So I'm rewriting here my problem with only the finite value case for the dual function and adding constraints. Here, I'm listing the constraints. I have to add that this happens. Because if that doesn't, then this guy is minus infinity. Right? So I can write my problem a little differently. I can actually eliminate lambda. Lambda doesn't play a role in the objective, only intervenes here and there. So I can get rid of lambda and write my problem as such. So nu is my variable, and the constraints are that this here, this vector should be non-negative. All right. What can you say about this problem? Is it a conic optimization problem? If so, what kind of conic optimization problem is? It's an LP. Why? It's minimizing or maximizing a linear function, subject to inequalities, and each inequality involves a linear or affine function of the variable. All right? So it's an LP. So we went from an LP to another LP. We don't see absolutely why we would even bother about this. This is, seems utterly useless, right? I'm going to give you an example now to sort of put these questions to rest in a way. I want to give you an example that demonstratively shows why LP duality is useful. Before I do that, I just want to state a theorem without proof that says that, in fact, in most cases, except very pathological cases, these two things are equal. So the theorem is, if one of the primal or dual LPs, those two problems are both LPs, is feasible, then P star equals D star. Okay, so in most cases, you really have to think hard about thinking a problem which is infeasible and whose dual is infeasible. It's hard. By the way, let me just give you an interpretation of what it means for the dual to be feasible. Primal feasible means you look at those equations, you can satisfy them, right? You're not trying to optimize over an empty set. Your problem makes sense. Usually that's the case. Now, what does it mean for the dual to be feasible? Any hints? Yes, exactly. See, the dual feasible means that there is a nu and a lambda that satisfy those constraints. For that nu, this is finite, meaning that P star cannot be unbounded below. P star cannot be minus infinity. See, this could happen, that an LP is feasible, but then the minimum value is minus infinity. You can go down. We've seen examples. Imagine you had no constraints. You'd be unbounded below in most cases. Dual feasibility means exactly that the problem is bounded below. Okay, that's the interpretation. Any questions? Now I'm going to give you an example. Yes?
Does this follow from Slater's condition?
It's a variant, because Slater's condition is a generic, very general condition that is a little stronger, asks more, but applies to more general settings, not just LP, all convex optimization. And basically, it says if the primal is strictly feasible, then strong duality holds. For LP, you have to massage it and realize that actually you don't need strong feasibility. Strict feasibility.
This is specific to LP.
It's specific to LP. For SDP, for example, it's not true. You can have an SDP that's feasible, not strictly. I can give you an example later. And its dual is strong duality doesn't hold. All right. So here's an example of application to the nagging question of why do we bother about duality for LP? There's many answers. Here's a very simple observation. Suppose you have a vector x in Rn, and suppose I have an optimization problem, it's all nice and convex, but it involves a constraint like this. The sum of the k largest elements in x, which I'm going to write like this, is bounded by, say, 1 or some number. So what this symbol means, it's I in brackets, that refers to the ith largest component in x. And I'm doing the sum. So if I have x equals minus 1, 2.1, 3, minus 5, I can form S2 of x to be I take the sum of the two largest components of x. Okay? Question: is this function convex? Who says yes? Who says no? Minus 10 point on the grid. No, I'm kidding. Are you sure? So why is it convex? Huh?
I guess you can express it as a minimum of a set of affine functions over some set.
Minimum? So minimum of maximum. All right. So what would be in this case, for example? Suppose, let's take a simpler case. N equals 3. And I'm interested in S2 of x. And you claim I can write it as the maximum of affine functions. Is that what you said?
I think so.
Yeah. So can you guys help him?
You transpose x with infinity norm of u less than or equal
to h. Is that all? Don't you need to... You're almost there. Let's make it a little simpler. X is x1, x2, x3. What are the three possibilities for x2? If x1 and x2 are the two largest, then it's going to be x1 plus x2. If 2 and 3 are the largest, x2 plus x3. But if 1 and 3 are the largest, x1 plus x3. I claim that S2 of x in this case is simply this maximum. You just look at all the possible sums involving two variables, and then you get a bunch of different sums, and you take the largest. Isn't that how we could do? Right? So when n equals 500 and k equals 20, how many such sums do I have? Huh? It's 10 to the 40. So how can I code this problem effectively? In fact, if you go to CVX, there's a function called sum largest. And you can play around with that function. You know, you can take 500 element vectors, impose a constraint that the sum of the 20 largest is less than 5 or 3. It'll handle it. No problem. Why? It's clearly not by listing, not using this convexity proof. Right? It's using duality. So let's form the dual. Of what? Well, there's no problem. Well, the problem is the dual of a problem which implements this sum. So we're going to first actually express our sum as the solution of a linear program. And we're going to be guided by this guy, right? So we start by a maximization problem. I want you to write down, and I heard someone, I think it was you, said something very close to it. I want you to write down Sk of x, x is fixed as the solution to an LP. So you are on the road. So essentially, this is the sum of a finite thing. It's not quite an LP, right? Right. Okay. So U acts as some kind of indicator saying that I pick.
We want to pick only K of
X. Right. Okay, that's the suggestion. L1 norm equal to K. So L1 norm then is this. Is this correct? That's okay, that's okay. We will get there. Is this correct, by the way? It's true. What happens is U is a decision variable that tells you, are you going to pick x1 in your sum or not? x2, etc. And you have a finite budget for U. Okay? Now, in fact, this is not an LP, as you point out. Why? Exactly, there's a Boolean constraint. This is actually a quadratic constraint on U. However, we can show that this happens. And I'll show you very quickly why. You see, you're maximizing a convex function over a set. Well, guess what? Imagine you have a complicated set like this, right? And you're maximizing a convex function over the set. I say, so let's say the function is linear, as in this case. That's where you want to go, right? You want to go as far as possible in one direction. So, okay? So these are different level sets of your convex here linear function, and you're maximizing. I claim it's the same as if you'd maximize over the convex hull. In that sense, maximizing over a convex set is easy if you know the convex hull. In general, it's very hard to know the convex hull. But the convex hull of the Boolean problem, or the feasible set, is exactly what I wrote here. All right. It's easy to independently convince yourself of the validity of this. If I give you x, then you can pick, show very easily that there's a choice of u that will give you sk of x. In other words, inequality like this holds. And then it's very easy to show that it's optimal. Okay? So we start from this one. And now we form the dual. And please, can you form the dual? It's instructive to form a dual in a simple case to train how to form a dual. So that's the problem. I'd like you to form a dual. So let's take about 5 minutes and hope that you can find the dual. You can retrace all the steps here, copying directly, or just think about what do you want to do. And what is the Lagrangian and so on. All right. This is indeed a linear programming problem. Why? We minimize or maximize a linear objective subject to equality constraints on the variables that are linear and inequalities involving linear or affine functions. All right? So let's go directly at a quick way to form a dual. So here's the textbook way. You first put the problem in standard form, and then you go through all this development. I'm going to use a shortcut. I'm going to do something called partial duality. I'm going to focus on this one. I notice that if I remove this constraint, I would know how to solve this problem, right? It's very easy. What would be the largest? U transpose X. So let's solve our subproblem. Solve min or max of U transpose X. Can you solve this one? Is that true? If X is minus 2, what's the answer? Exactly. Okay? So based on that observation and that whole idea of duality, when you have a constraint you don't like, dualize it. That's the basis of all the approaches we'll see in distributed optimization and so on. So this is where the problem becomes more difficult than this one, because it couples everything. Here what's happening is that you notice that this problem is actually undecoupled. This is nothing else than a sum of ui xi. And these independent constraints do not couple the variables at all. So you can actually write down the solution as the sum of max instead of max of sum. That's the key point. When you have a problem that's uncoupled, you can exploit this. So this is a very simple instance we'll see in distributed optimization, where actually what's happening is that because the problem is uncoupled, you can solve it in a distributed way. You can ask n different agents or computers to solve their little problem. In this case, it's a moot point, of course, because we can solve everything by hand. It's a baby problem. But the same idea will extend to more complicated situations. So nevertheless, based on this, that's when you have here a one-dimensional problem, you can think about it. Oh, if xi is positive, then I'll choose ui equals 1. If xi is negative, I'll choose 0. Okay, that's why you get this expression. How can we leverage this? Again, what I'm doing is forming a dual. So there's a textbook mechanical procedure. I don't want to go through it again. I want to show you a shortcut. All I need to do is to start with this problem and dualize meaning express. And I'm keeping here constraints. This is a component-wise vector notation. This is a vector of ones. I'm saying ui is between 0 and 1. And here I'm using a min to represent the constraint I don't like, the constraint that couples everything and makes this formula invalid. So what? How many variables, dual variables, do I need here? Just one, because I have one constraint that couples things. So let's call this t, and then write down the objective plus a linear combination with t weight of the constraint. So t k minus sum of ui. Okay? This holds because this is the main idea behind representing a problem in as a game as opposed to a constraint problem. We started with a problem with this constraint which we don't like, and so we express the problem as a game, max min. All right? And now we can apply weak duality. So when I start with a max problem, I get an upper bound or a lower bound when I exchange? Upper bound. If it's a max, you get something you couldn't get with your max. It's always counterintuitive. The max is less than a min, right? And that's where you see why I went through the trouble of solving this problem. Because now, when I look at the max, this is my dual function. I get, collecting terms, a linear function in U. Okay, I've rewritten the function in a way which makes the dependence on U very clear. This is really nothing but a constant term here, which I'm going to put here. And here I have the maximum of a linear function of U. That's my problem right there, but with a different x. So I can write this as min over t. I have my first constant term, kt, plus something that I'm outlining here. This part, as I said, I've solved it. See, by duality, what's happening is you uncouple things. This is not coupled anymore. There's no coupling in the constraints. Every coupling that's bothering, you dualize. So what's the answer to that problem? The dual function problem. Okay, it's a sum of a maximum. If you were to take your LP here and go through the process of applying LP duality, it turns out you would find this exactly, and you would declare that equality holds. Now I'm going to show you that actually equality holds directly. First I apply weak duality, I get this bound. Then I want to say, yes?
Can you explain how you want to use first line, SKX,
this one. Yeah. So this is what I call dualizing one constraint. Essentially this is my Lagrangian, where I take the objective and form a weighted combination of the objective and the constraint that's bothering me, the coupling constraint, with weight equal to the dual variable. T is actually what we called nu before. I just want to emphasize it's a single parameter because I have one constraint. So essentially, to answer your question, I start with the problem, and whatever constraint that's coupling, I'm going to make it appear in the objective with a weight called the dual variable. And then, magically, I can write my problem as a max-min, where here the constraint that's bothering me has disappeared. It's implicit, though, because you can see, if k is different from this sum, if ui does not satisfy the constraint, then I can choose t with a sign depending on whether this is bigger or smaller, to make the whole thing minus infinity. I don't want to go to these regions when trying to maximize.
It's a maximum because the original problem was max.
Yeah. So the original problem is a max. So I start with a max, and then I do a min. If I had a min, I would have a max. Always a game between the primal and dual variables. All right, it turns out that without invoking any theory of LP duality, you can show that actually equality holds. How? Well, how? See, you have a minimization problem. The value of the minimization problem is above a number, say 3. if you attain that value with some t, then you're done. There is equality. If I tell you the minimum of the function is above a number, let's call it s. Okay? That's what this says. Weak duality says the minimization of a certain thing is above a number. All right? Now, on top of it, if I exhibit a value of t which achieves this guy, then in fact that value must be here and equality holds. There is no gap. You see my point? So all we need to do is exhibit a t that achieves this. It's very easy. Assume, for example, you have four x's that they're all ordered. Okay, let's say three x's, they're all ordered. How would you choose t so that this equals to the sum of the largest? Let's say to simplify this holds. You choose t equals a certain number, plug that number inside, and you get the sum of the two largest, in this case x1 plus x2. What do you choose? x3, right? If you choose x3, then actually something bigger, smaller than between x2 and x3, you'll see that the x3 part will not appear in there. So actually, equality holds, and this is what CVX uses. See what's happening. We started with a problem where we were concerned with sk of x less than a number, alpha. And we said, yeah, we can handle that. That's a convex function, but you know, it can involve an exponential number of inequalities. So this is not the way we can reliably scale that up, right? If you're able to formulate this as, instead of a max problem, as we started with, as a min, then what do you think of the constraint like this? Min, a minimum, is less than this guy. Can we handle that with CVX, with a moderate number of constraints? If you say a minimum is less than a number, that's the same as there exists. It means there exists t such that this holds. Now look at this constraint. So I'm writing an equivalent statement. There exists t such that, and I write the constraint again. Is this jointly convex in x and t? The question will be, this is a single constraint, right? I'm not talking about an exponential number of constraints. The only thing I've done is I've added one variable and represent an exponential number of constraints with a single constraint. Now, is that constraint convex? Is this function of t and x convex? So when faced, I see some people say yes, and they're right. When faced with this question, you want to weed out the difficulties. You want to remove linear functions. This is a convex function. You add it to something. So the problem is this convex? Right? Then you have a sum. Is this one convex? Right? Now you weed out, you simplify. And then here, this is a linear function of x and t. So the question is the function that gives you max or zero y, is that a convex function? If you prove that, by combination, this is going to be convex. By combination, this is going to be convex. And so on. That's how CVX does. So this is a maximum of a constant and a linear function, it's convex. So this function is, of course, convex. Well, doesn't really yet pinpoint the progress. We started with a function which we knew was convex. That's a single constraint, it's convex. And we end up with another single constraint that's convex. We haven't really understood yet why did we bother to do all this. We bothered because this is almost an LP constraint. How can I write it down as an LP constraint with a moderate number of constraints? This is not a linear constraint. It looks almost linear. It's piecewise linear. Huh? Yes, you introduce new variables each time you see a max. It exists T and V in Rn. And can you write down what the constraint will be? Right? And then VI should be an upper bound on this guy. We're done. Okay, let us summarize. I claim this represents this constraint. This constraint is equivalent to the existence of T and V that satisfy those. That last step here is simply to say, if this holds for a V, see that V is bigger than the max, so it will hold for the max. Conversely, if it holds for the max here, you can take V to be equal to that guy, and naturally V will satisfy those constraints. So there's an if and only if. What have we gained in this whole process? Can you tell me? Why did we bother? Yes, that's one piece. So we've represented a constraint involving the sum of the k largest element, which is a nonlinear constraint, as a bunch of linear inequalities. That's the first benefit. Can someone tell me more? That's one thing we did for sure. That means if we have linear programming solvers, we can use that representation as opposed to that one. Is that all we've gained?
Well, we reduced the number of variables. If we wanted to represent the maximum of the functions, it's some exponential number of variables you would need. So
very good. Yeah. So what he's referring to is that this step we already had before we did all this duality business. Remember that this kind of constraint for k equals 2, n equals 3 is nothing else than max of x1 plus x2, x2 plus x3, x3 plus x1, less than alpha. Well, there you go, your LP representation. That's the same as saying all possible two-term sums are bounded by alpha. I just need to just go through the list. So here's already an LP representation of my constraint. The difference between this very straightforward representation and this more sophisticated one is in the number of constraints and variables. See here, if I have k equals 20, n equals 500, I would have 10 to the 40 constraints, corresponding to every possible choice of 20 in 500. Okay? Of course, I'm not adding any new variables, but I have an enormous number of constraints to deal with, making it impossible, not difficult, impossible to use that constraint in this form. Whereas here, let's count how many constraints and variables we have. So typically, we have 2n plus 1 variables. Why do I say this? Because here I've added variables. I have my n original variables, xi through 1 to n. And also I have for each one of them a new variable vi. I have a last one, t. So in the end, I have more variables, but I have much less constraints. How many constraints I have? One linear inequality, n linear inequalities, n linear inequalities. So 2n plus 1 constraints. It's an enormous gain from exponential number of constraints to a linear in n number of variables and constraints. So at the price of adding, doubling the number of variables, essentially, and doubling the number of constraints, I can represent a very complicated function. Any questions? So I didn't get far in terms of Koenig duality. We just did LP duality, but I felt it was important to sort of go through this process and tell you about why do we bother about convex duality. That's one example that, to me, is striking, where if you didn't have convex duality, you can just handle that kind of constraint. There's many other constraints that have that same property, that if you just go at it just directly, impossible. You take the dual of that constraint, of that function, and there you can optimize it. Any questions? Yes.
So underlying intuition, that's why it works.
Yes, that's very good. So I won't give you the intuition in this precise setting, but I'll give you a geometrical intuition. Here's what's happening. So imagine this is your X space, and this is here an added space where I collect all the new variables I need. So here's the starting point. Imagine you have here a polytope with an exponential number of vertices. Essentially, that polytope could be a polytope that looks like this. By polytope, if you remember, what I really mean here is simply a set of points that's defined by linear inequalities, linear affine inequalities. Here, for general n and k, I have an exponential number of constraints leading to an exponential number of facets. Here's the very, to me, fascinating fact that adding just a few variables, you can, in fact, see the whole polytope. And my drawing is inexact, but I hope you get the idea. Such that the projection of the polytope on the X space has an exponential number of facets. So here the polytope in the big space is nothing else than the set of T, V, and X variables that satisfy these moderate number of constraints. This is also a polytope, but in X, V, T space, augmented space. So there's only a very moderate number of constraints here, 2n plus 1. So by adding a moderate number of variables and forming a moderate number of facets, you can form an object so that when you project it, it becomes this very, very complicated object. That simply means that when you take a simple object in high dimensions and you project it on a lower dimension, simple object in high dimension is here, you project it on the space of x variables in this case, you might get a very hard to deal with object. But by this I mean has many constraints. To me it's very striking that there is this possibility. It's simply an indication that high dimensions is not a big problem. It can be your friend. By adding variables, you can make life easier.
Is obtaining a very complicated object look like the generic situation, or is that sort of the very unique situation?
Oh, that's. I don't know the answer. This is a very good question. I'm not equipped to really answer to this. I think it's pretty generic, though. There is many instances where going high dimensions is actually your friend. We've seen that in SDP relaxation. Remember, we say, oh, here's small x, my variable. I have Boolean variables and so on and so forth. It turns out that by lifting x to a big matrix variable, then you are able to at least approximate well using convex models, something that is Boolean nature very hard. So, I mean, not to be overly philosophical here, but I think that this effect of lifting is really what's going on. All right, see you next time.